We do have a guest on the line. We have John Gunn, Dr. Gunn, the lead author of a study on firearms and a postdoctoral researcher at the Rutgers School of Public Health and New Jersey Gun Violence Research. Dr. Gunn, thanks so much for being here today.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
So I want to start off by asking, what exactly did your study find and how did you arrive at this conclusion?
Sure. So what we wanted to examine was the impact of gun laws on a state's suicide and homicide rates. So in order to do this, we compared states on their total number of gun laws and their suicide and homicide rates while also controlling for a number of potential factors that we thought might influence it. So things like what region of the country the states were located in, how many people were estimated to own guns in the states, whether how high was the unemployment rate. Even when we controlled for those factors, we ended up finding that the total number of gun laws in a state was still a significant predictor of the state's suicide and homicide rates. So ultimately, states with a greater number of gun laws had lower suicide and homicide rates, and states with fewer gun laws tended to have higher rates.
So you guys defined states that, I guess, are more gun lenient versus states that are more restrictive by counting the types of laws or looking at the exact types of laws, whether it be like waiting times, or how exactly did you define states that are more lenient versus states that are more restrictive?
Yes, this is an excellent question. So our study is certainly not the first to reconcile the relationship between gun laws and gun deaths. Others have examined the impact of individual laws, and some have actually used scoring systems such as those created by Giffords or Brady in order to rate a state on how lenient or extreme their gun or strict their gun laws are. But what we wanted to gauge was the overall gun culture within a state. We didn't want to examine individual laws, but we were hesitant to use the Gifford and Brady scoring systems because they're created by advocacy groups, and we wanted to avoid the appearance of an agenda. And so we turned to Boston University's State Firearm Law Database, which ultimately counts the number of laws and produces a yearly database on the total number of gun laws in a state. So it doesn't give a scoring based on the type of law. It doesn't give weights. It just gives an overall count of how many gun laws are present in a state. And for our study, we considered a greater number of laws as being indicative of a stricter gun culture, whereas if it had fewer laws, it was a more lenient gun culture. And we were able to collect this data from 1991 all the way through 2017.
So a pretty extensive study for sure. So now that we know how exactly you defined the different states that are more lenient versus states that are more restrictive, I was wondering if you could take two of those states, maybe one that is extremely lenient versus one that is very, very strict, and kind of tell us, like, how do they differ, whether it comes to the number of laws and the types of different firearm laws?
Sure. So take it for an example. We'll look at 2017. Mississippi generally falls at the bottom of any list on total number of gun laws or even on the rankings from like Giffords or Brady. So Mississippi in 2017 only had two gun laws on records. And they also had a suicide rate of about 14.8 per 100,000 people and a homicide rate of around 12 per 100,000 people. If you contrast that with New Jersey, where we are, we have 75 laws on record as of 2017, and our suicide rate is 8.8 per 100,000, and our homicide rate is 3.9 per 100,000. So we have more laws, and we have lower homicide and suicide rates compared to a state like Mississippi. These comparisons aren't necessarily cut and dry. It's important to know that there are some exceptions. So if we look at a state like Colorado, which falls more towards the middle, they had 30 laws on record in 2017, but they still had a relatively high suicide rate. So their suicide rate was 21 per 100,000. So it is important to remember that when we're looking at just the total number of laws, we're looking at the average, there is going to be some variation. But generally speaking, putting aside a few exceptions, the pattern is that if there are low or high gun laws, there are low suicide and homicide rates.
So something in your study that you definitely already mentioned is that you looked at both suicides as well as homicides. And your study even mentions how firearms account for 48% of suicides. So what firearm regulations can states implement to reduce the rate of firearm suicides?
Sure. So first, just a little background information. You know, in an ideal world, in order to prevent suicide, we'd want to identify people at risk and jump in ahead of time. But in the reality of it is we often are involved in prevention either during a crisis or immediately afterwards. So firearms tend to pose a particularly important issue for us because firearms are a highly lethal method. So, for example, if someone makes an attempt at suicide with an overdose, they can typically they typically die in less than 5% of those attempts. But when you bring a firearm into the mix, that first attempt can be fatal close to 90% of the time. And so they tend to be a really big driver of suicide mortality. So for this reason, and based on the research, there's pretty strong evidence that our best method for reducing suicide in general is targeting firearms. So things like safe storage laws. Safe storage has been found to, and when I talk about safe storage, I'm talking about keeping a gun locked away, keeping it unloaded, making sure the ammunition is stored separately. And the research has found that if you engage in these safe storage practices, there tends to be lower likelihood of a suicide occurring. And so laws that target safe storage, there's also extreme risk protection orders where there's the potential to remove a firearm in times of crises. These can make a big impact. It is important to note, though, with ERPOs, so these extreme risk protection orders, they are fairly new and there is more research needed for them. And there is some recent evidence that they may be targeting racially marginalized populations more. But I would certainly point towards legislation that looks at safe storage, waiting periods, ERPOs, any of these that place time between when an individual once it decides to make an attempt and actually goes on to make the attempt, if we can put a little barrier in between that, we can really have the potential to save lives.
Also, according to your research, it seems like you kind of hear a lot of these different arguments about how gun control can sometimes be ineffective. And you always hear people mention Chicago, which has obviously a public health issue with gun violence, yet they have very strict gun control laws and regulations. So how do you usually react to different arguments that say, what's the point of gun control when you look at a place like Chicago where there are strict gun laws and still a lot of gun violence?
Yeah, that's a great point. I would point to two areas. So one, our research and a lot of research that's looking at a public health perspective, we're looking at the population level and we're really looking at averages. And when we look at that average population level, we're going to have exceptions to the rules. So what our findings indicate is that on average, more gun laws mean less gun deaths. There are going to be exceptions to that. So certainly Chicago may be one of them. But a second important factor that is often missed is the fact that there are no hard borders between our states. So data from the ATF as recent as 2017 points to a problem of guns crossing state lines, where a significant percentage of the guns used in crimes in Chicago actually originated from outside the state. So we can go and we can work at limiting access to firearms in order to stop someone from harming themselves or others, but if they're a short drive away from a border in the state next to them, it's easier to get a gun, then those barriers to access don't really exist.
That's actually such an interesting point, because I think Chicago people always see as the exception, and it's always kind of used, I think, in arguments. So I guess following up on your last point, how can we also try to limit the transfer of firearms from one state that might be a little bit more lenient into a state that is a little bit more strict and hopefully prevent an issue like we're seeing in Chicago?
Sure. So there are partnerships between states. I believe New Jersey has one with New York. So there can be strong partnerships created between states that target the trafficking of firearms between states that could help to stop those guns from being purchased out of state and then brought into state and used illegally. And in light of that, there can also be maybe a federal push, if any type of federal laws can be put in place that can be more universal across the states.
So I guess pivoting to what we're seeing more recently now, we have unfortunately witnessed a number of mass shootings over the last couple of weeks. Using your research and according to your research, how can some of these horrific incidents have been prevented?
Yeah, so I should caveat my response here with the fact that I am predominantly a suicide researcher, so I don't typically focus much on mass shootings, but they are a very tragic issue, and they leave a lot of devastation in their wake. But they do tend to be relatively rare events in comparison to other forms of gun violence, like suicide or non-mass shooting homicides. That being said, there is evidence that gun laws can be used to impact the prevalence of mass shootings. So some great work out of Johns Hopkins University looked at the implementation of certain laws and whether or not they, when they were put into effect, did they affect whether or not that state experienced more mass shootings or less mass shootings. And ultimately what they found is that certain laws will affect it and certain laws may not. So things like licensing laws, where an individual is required to go through a fingerprinting and a background check process, and laws that ban large capacity magazines, these did seem to have an impact where they reduced the number of mass shootings in the state.
So I think you've, you know, touched on just a variety of issues when it comes to gun violence, and it is completely understandable that gun violence is one of the many major public health concerns in the United States. So for my final question, what research do you think still needs to be done on gun violence to appropriately address the issue?
Yeah, so there are a lot of questions we still need to answer. An important one I raised briefly earlier is centered around things like ERPOs, where we're actually removing a firearm. There is some recent work that indicates that ERPOs, like many other aspects of the legal system, may be targeting racial marginalized groups. So guns may be being removed from black citizens more than white citizens in the states that ERPOs have been implemented. So research that really delves into that kind of nuance and delving into, you know, what is the impact of these laws? Are they being felt equally across groups, or are there ways in which these laws are being misused? I think that's important. But ultimately, what we really need to do is something we've just started to do, and that is to invest money in studying gun violence. So when New Jersey established the Gun Violence Research Center, it really set us apart as one of very few states that have such centers. California has one, we have one, New York's talked about it. So there's only a handful of states that have actually invested in researching gun violence. At the federal level, we're only now starting to see gun violence research being focused on. So if we truly want to understand how to prevent gun violence, then we really have to put politics aside and focus more on our efforts at collecting evidence-based practices and engaging communities. Research, like that I've discussed today, is important, but it's also important that we reach out, we get to know those in the communities that are most impacted, and working with groups like gun owners and gun advocacy groups to get safe storage messaging out there, listening to the voices of those in communities who have been devastated by gun violence. So just branching out in considering who we're bringing into the fold, who we're talking to, and putting politics aside and putting money where our mouth is.
Dr. Gunn, postdoctoral researcher at the Rutgers School of Public Health and New Jersey Gun Violence Research Center, thank you so much for meeting with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.